Back to Brodin. 15 seconds left. Kaprizov. Johansson fires. Scores! It's an OTGWG for Johansson.
LaPanta. Going into the deep acronym bag there.
Wow.
So OTGWGM, I take that to mean game-winning goal. Right?
Correct.
Okay, all right.
Hockey Whisperer.
I want to play that again. That's some classic LaPanta there.
Back to Brodin. 15 seconds left. Kaprizov. Johansson fires. Scores! It's an OTGWG for Johansson.
Did he pre-plan that? Or did he get into the OT and then decided to keep going with the acronym?
I think it came spontaneously.
I think it's spontaneous.
I don't think it was, because I don't think you'd pre-plan it, because it's not good enough to pre-plan.
Correct.
So, like, I think he started down the path. But, I mean, you know, it's fine. But I heard that, I'm like, OT. Oh, yeah, okay. Overtime game-winning goal. Very good.
So the Wild, and particularly the way that they look in overtime this year compared to not just last year, but pretty much every year, that'll be a subject of discussion today. Mackie and Judd's statements. And also, what are we watching? But we've got a little reckless speculation off the top, because I don't know about you guys, but I couldn't stop thinking about a certain someone as new reports surfaced throughout the weekend. So all kinds of stuff to get to here on this Monday. But Federated Insurance has been helping business owners, and been helping our show and Score North as well as one of our main partners. But they've been helping business owners since the early 1900s, based in Owatonna, Minnesota. And they are stepping up their game for business owners even more in 2021. Federated Mutual Insurance Company recently launched MyShield, the online client destination for risk management resources. Now, as a business owner, how helpful would it be for you to have employee training at your fingertips? Industry resources that can help your business reach another level of success. Think about all the things that could involve risk when it comes to your business. Like, do your employees drive company vehicles? Do they use ladders? Other things that could be risky. Well, MyShield has resources to help your business with all sorts of things related to risk management, whether it's safety training and videos, risk management plans, workplace posters, you name it. Federatedinsurance.com to find out more about MyShield, or you can just download the app and or talk to your local Federated marketing representative. Remember, at Federated, it's our business to protect yours.
TCL is a proud sponsor of the Score North Studios. Enjoy more of the things you love with TCL. These two guys have Minnesota sports flowing in their veins. Mackie and Judd on Score North and ScoreNorth.com.
How much football did you guys inject into your veins this weekend? Was it all of the football?
Dawn was gone, so I basically got on the couch Saturday and in the morning, and I got off the couch last night and went to bed. So
did you sleep on the couch on Saturday into Sunday and just stay
there? You
know
what? I don't sleep well on the couch. I nap well there. So I actually
same.
How often are you forced to sleep on the couch?
My bed.
Yeah.
Well,
twice a week.
Yeah, exactly right. All the time. No, but I don't sleep well. I don't sleep well overnight on the couch, but I nap well there.
Correct.
And so I got on the couch on Saturday morning and essentially stayed there. And then, but I have to go to bed. It's weird.
I'm the same way, Judd. Exact same.
I'm glad to know I'm not completely
Your
weird.
Sports son's the exact same way.
A lot of people sleep on the couch and are fine with it. And for some, I don't know why, but for some reason, I'm not. I can't sleep really well on the couch.
I always feel like I sleep okay. Like if I fall asleep, I think I fell asleep on Friday night and woke up at like 1 a.m. and like Jonna had just given up on me and like gone to bed.
Classic.
And I sleep okay on the couch, but I always feel guilty. I wake up at like 1 and I'm like, why am I here? This is weird. I'm just going to like go to bed for a few hours now. I don't know. I just have a weird complex about it.
I fell asleep. During the Packer game, I actually fell asleep during the fourth quarter. My nap kicked in around then, which actually worked out really well.
Well, you're a huge Packer fan.
Yeah,
you're sleeping through half the game.
My big Packer fan, which are now all in my mentions of, oh, glad you're on the green and gold bandwagon, Declan. But
yeah, well, you are sort of are.
But I fell asleep during the fourth quarter, so a hell of a Packer fan I am. So
nice so work. I also injected all the football into my veins. You guys,
so much football.
Like, Judd's a Saved by the Bell fan. I can't remember, Declan, you haven't really watched much Saved by the Bell?
No.
Judd, do you remember the episode where Zach Morris, I think it was early Bayside season, like season one, and Zach is obsessed with Kelly Kapowski, and everywhere he opens like his closet, he sees Kelly's face. He's talking to other girls, and he sees Kelly's face.
Yeah, vaguely, yes.
Like everywhere he turns, yes. He sees Kelly's face, right? That's what happened to me this weekend with Deshaun Watson. Open the fridge. Go grab a cold one. Wait. I see Deshaun Watson's right face.
I'm going to stop you right there because I'm going to tell you right now, he's not being traded. Everybody tells me he's not being traded, okay? I mean,
you guys
Stephon Diggs
just...
is staying put here and Deshaun Watson is staying. Quit trying to make things up, all right?
Josh Donaldson isn't coming to the Twins.
Deshaun Watson's not being traded. It's never going to happen, ever, 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 unless Shefty tells me it's going to happen.
You guys are just pushing your reckless speculation agenda.
Reckless speculation.
Until Shefter reports it, I don't believe it.
Well, I can't guarantee part two of this, which is he should play for the Vikings, which we'll get into some of that. But part one, which is the most important part, how possible and feasible is it that one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL entering his prime, dynamic, mobile, all these things, is just available for trade. Mm-hmm. Here's the latest. Adam Schefter, who you just mentioned, tweets yesterday, there's a growing sense from people in and around the Texans organization that Deshaun Watson has played his last snap for the team. It's early in the offseason. There's a lot of time left, but Watson's feelings cannot and should not be underestimated. He doubled down on that this morning on Get Up and basically said Deshaun Watson has all of the leverage because they gave him a no trade clause. And he said verbatim, Adam Schefter, the Texans need Deshaun Watson a lot more than Deshaun Watson needs the Texans at this point in life.
Yes.
So he doubled down on it. Ian Rappaport from Good Morning Football NFL Network, he said this morning on Twitter, Deshaun Watson has not asked for a trade and the team hasn't said they'll trade him. However, teams are calling anyway. The Jets and the Dolphins have been discussed publicly, but don't dismiss the Panthers being in the mix. Now, in fairness, you only get like 240 characters in tweets. I'm sure he was going to mention the Vikings in this tweet.
Correct.
And just ran out of characters after Panthers. I mean, and then Daniel Jeremiah tweeted over the weekend, too. And I think this is more speculation, but he's also plugged into the league. If Watson becomes available via trade, the Jets should call. You could trade the number two overall pick this year, a first-round pick next year, and a first-round pick in 2023. By the way, the Jets have multiple first-round picks this year and next year, so they just have a lot of draft capital to pick from. And that would probably get it done. So he's almost certainly going to get traded. I don't think you put the toothpaste back in the tube with this, and there's going to be all kinds of options in a bidding war.
Right.
And obviously, like, if he wants to go play for the Jets and he has a no trade clause, he can sort of dictate that. And the Jets have a lot more assets. So I'm not even saying the Vikings would be front runners. But all I can think about this weekend was, my God, if you hadn't signed that Kirk Cousins, if you hadn't tried to smooth out that contract, let's lower the cap number and lock him in for $60 million guaranteed, you'd have a wide open runway to at least make a push for one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL, the franchise quarterback you've been looking for basically since Dante Culpepper blew out his knee. I opened the cupboard and saw him too, by the way. Just his face staring at me. No, Deshaun.
Oh, Deshaun.
Yeah. No, you see Dante.
I see Dante.
And to go back to Dante, and to go back, it's not an exact parallel, but I'll tell you what, the expectation that Childress had when he took the job in 2006 here, right, was that I'm going to have, you know, Dante's going to come back from the knee. He's going to be fine, and I'm going to have my franchise QB. And Dante said, "You're going to pay me more, or I'm gone." And I don't. And so this is a bit of a parallel in the fact that Deshaun is going to say, "You're going to trade me," and the Texans are going to have to. Just quickly though, so I love where we are from a sports reckless speculation standpoint. Speaking of the term smoothing things out now, where you are now in this weird cycle where when a really good player asks to be traded, and by the way, he's going to be, okay, you now have guys like Schefter and Jeremiah and Rappaport. Basically, they have to try to communicate with the trade truthers by telling them, by like warming them up for no, this is going to happen, and you basically have to accept it. And perhaps if I tell you, you will accept it, right?
Yeah.
It's like there's now this period of tweets that have to go out with, hey, look, I know that you believe that there's no way the Texans aren't going to trade him, but they're going to. And so since you're a trade truther, I'm going to have to essentially explain to you that this is coming. It's hilarious now.
Well,
they're all doing it.
And this is like the NFL has largely just had its thumb on quarterbacks. Like it's kind of shocking how few top quarterbacks in their prime just become available for bidding wars. You know, just because the way that contracts are structured, you get a lump sum guarantee. Like if it's a 5-year contract, you know, and this applies to almost everyone except Kirk Cousins, who got a fully guaranteed contract with the Vikings, a 3-year deal, right?
Mm-hmm.
You get the guaranteed money for the first 2 or 3 years, and then the guaranteed money goes away, but you're still under contract for like $30 million if they, and so like you never become an actual free agent as a quarterback until you're 40, basically, because they just keep, you just keep signing these contracts with front-loaded guarantees, and you keep chasing the guarantees. And now I feel like Deshaun Watson might be opening up an era that's more like the NBA where, okay, he had a no-trade clause, he's highly paid, and he has looked around the room in Houston and said, this is incompetence at best.
And they lied.
It's malpractice and deception. And, you know, I don't think we've gotten the full story, but Dan Orlovsky came on Get Up this morning, and he might have played for the Texans at one point, but he's plugged in to current players. And he said, there's certain things I cannot tell you on TV. But this is a lot worse behind the scenes than people think. And the way that the Houston Texans operate behind the scenes, I'm telling you that Deshaun Watson should absolutely flex his muscles and get out of there. And so there might be more instances like this. But my question to you guys is, as it pertains to the Vikings, who appear to be either not in the mix at all for him, or, you know, at best, maybe they pick up the phone and they're told, sorry, like, we're not gonna wait for you to clear Kirk's contract out. And like, you guys just aren't in a place to make this happen. How does it make you guys feel that they aren't in a place to make this happen? If that is indeed the way this plays out, and it looks like it is, how does it make you feel that they can't make this happen right now?
If this was an isolated thing where I felt the rest of the Vikings strategy and how they approach roster construction now was fine, I think it would be my feeling would be slightly frustrating, but not much more than that. But it's not. I see the more I watch games of playoff teams now, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the more I see the approach of teams. And make no mistake, the league is shifting in thought processes across the board. Like, there are things changing as we speak right now. And there are teams, some with older executives and coaches, some with young ones, who are changing as it changes because they know that that is the way to win. I look at the Vikings now, and the fact that they're not in position, the fact that they basically had this weird notion of, if we just get Kirk's contract, if we just get the cap hit down for 2020, we'll be fine. And then I guess we can be competitive in 2020, which they really weren't. The most adult word that I could possibly use to sum up my feeling is this: flawed. I feel it's flawed. I feel it's flawed that a great quarterback who potentially could alter your franchise for, let's say, 8 to 10 years is there, and you've got a solid and good, but what I would describe as not great QB, and you are stuck. But the Vikings are largely stuck. The last 2 weeks, when I watched the best teams, Phil and Dex, have proved to me that how the Vikings are doing things, at one time, much like the old school Twins, at one time was pretty smart and astute, but it's changing, and I don't see the Vikings adapting, and this is another example of the fact that they're not adapting, potentially holds them back from making a splash move that could answer a lot of their problems in one trade. It'd be a massive trade, but it would answer a lot of those problems.
Yeah. How do you feel, Declan? You've been sitting here waiting for a franchise quarterback, yeah, too, that they're not even really in a position to make a serious phone call on this.
It's frustrating. I understand why they had to extend Kirk to lower the cap for 2020, open up some cap space. But then when you really look at it, I mean, your main free agent piece last year was Michael Pierce. He opts out for the right reasons, by the way. It's not like he opts out because he did something wrong. He opted out because there was a pandemic going on and he has underlying health conditions.
Yep.
But it's just more icing on the cake of, why the hell did we even do this extension? Because now you could have been in the perfect position to at least acquire and make the phone call for Deshaun Watson.
Yes.
You wouldn't have had to trade up the second round pick to get Yannick Ngakoue for 6 weeks. You'd have all the resources to do it. So honestly, it just is frustrating. because I would have been ready to move on from Kirk right now. We could be having an unreal conversation, not just about Deshaun Watson, but of all the quarterbacks available in free agency and the draft or trade that the Vikings could be interested in. And as much as we love our reckless speculation, I could not imagine how much we could be talking about the next quarterback for the Vikings who could be at their disposal right now.
Reckless speculation.
Yeah, I mean, I think like you nailed it there in that in retrospect now, lowering Kirk's cap number and then adding more guaranteed money for future years in order to bring in a win now piece in Michael Pierce, you know, could they have foreseen the pandemic causing players to opt out? I mean, the pandemic was hitting around the time that NFL free agency was starting, and so maybe they should have had some more foresight to not put as many chips on the 2020 table as they did. But that's, you know, hindsight's 2020 on that front. They made a win now move to clear some cap space to get a guy who opted out. And as a result, they locked into Kirk Cousins for like $60 million guaranteed over 2021 and 2022. And they didn't make the playoffs after the win now move. So that blew up in their faces. And I think I was just sort of writing down as Judd was talking, you know, in terms of being stuck. Judd used the word stuck. And I think when it comes to quarterbacks in the NFL, I think you have to be in one of three places as a franchise. And if you're not in one of these three places, then you are stuck. And it is 100% self-inflicted. Place number one is you've drafted a young quarterback, ideally in the first round, you know, one that has a real chance to pan out. Not that all first-round quarterbacks pan out. But like you're making a real concerted effort at a franchise quarterback in the first round, a Josh Allen, a Lamar Jackson, whoever that is, right? He doesn't make a lot of money. He's on a rookie scale contract for 5 years, 4 or 5 years if you exercise the fifth year option, and you're seeing if he's the guy. So, and by the way, at any point during that stretch, like the Bears, if you decide after year three, he's not the guy, or year four, he's not the guy. He doesn't make a lot of money, and so you can just bring somebody else in. You can bring in Nick Foles, or you can, you know, whatever. You can bring in a Philip Rivers or somebody because you're not dedicating $30 million to that young quarterback. So position number one is you've got a young quarterback and you're just trying to see if he becomes a franchise guy, right? And the Vikings aren't in that position. Position number two is you got your franchise guy. He's like a top six or top seven quarterback. And because he's a top six, top seven quarterback, maybe even a Hall of Fame quarterback, it doesn't matter as much how much he makes. Obviously, you'd like to pay him less because then you can build your roster out. But like, it doesn't really matter how much Pat Mahomes makes. He's so good that he makes up for like your lack of a nickel cornerback or something, right? Like he's that good. Well, they're not really in that spot either. Like Kirk had a really good season, but Kirk ain't what Tom Brady is at 43.
He doesn't cover for people. Yeah, I agree with that.
He's not elevating like holes on your roster, sure. Right? Okay, well, what about the third position? I would say the third position should be if you don't have a young guy that you're trying to figure out and you don't have a stud, bona fide, potential Hall of Fame quarterback, then you should be in the transition bin, which is flexible contract, move off if necessary.
The Childress years.
Right.
That's where they stayed, the transition
Gus Frerotte, okay, we'll get a year of Brett Favre over here.
They paid him
and
for 1 year.
At no point did they lock in a non-elite quarterback to like $60 million guaranteed. So the Vikings are not in any of those three bins. They are in non-elite good quarterback, but non-elite quarterback who makes too much money to move off without feeling a significant cap hurt.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result, they don't really get to choose who they want to play quarterback. Like Deshaun Watson being available to them really is predicated on them moving Kirk Cousins' contract first. It's a huge pain in the ass for everybody involved.
And the problem is, in the Vikings' case, they're probably not even thinking in those terms at all. So I just had an epiphany. I think that we could come up with at least five solid rules for the Mackey and Judd rules for franchise success. And this is true in every sport, okay? And I was going to start with one. One is acceptance, because acceptance is the key to life. You have to accept where you are in your relationships, with your job, wherever you are in life. If you fight that, it's going to cause problems. So the acceptance of this is my lot in life, and I'm then going to adjust accordingly from there. The second one, and this is where the Vikings, to me, come into play here, and this is what holds them back from probably being a championship team. They're a good team, but not a championship team. And that is this one. Foresee your fate. So look at your fate. Where are you in life? And then adjust accordingly from there. And this is the one where the Vikings really, really screwed up for 2020. They didn't look at and say, you know what, Phil, 2 years ago we signed Kirk and we missed the playoffs, which, by the way, was a huge red flag. And then we made the playoffs and we won a playoff game and we got really excited. That's red flag, too. We got excited about one playoff win. So for 2020, we're not going to attempt to go back to Kirk and work his contract out to help our cap. We're going to make different moves. So the 2020 is Kirk's last year. We also, and this is another one, foresee your fate, okay? When I know that my head coach, his strength is cornerback play, and we just clean house of basically every starting type cornerback that we have, and we're going to bring in kids who, by the way, might be good, but this is a hard reset in the foresee your fate part of life. This is a, they're going to struggle, and that's okay, because we're going to not play as well as we possibly can and struggle, that's okay too. Think about that. Think about it. If the Vikings a year ago had sat down and said, let's consider our fate, let's consider what we tried to do, and let's accept it and adjust instead of, and this is what the Vikings did, they fought it.
So they got caught up in what this should look like, which is, okay, we won a playoff game, and now we're going to go from winning a playoff game to the next level, which has become Super Bowl contenders, and the pieces didn't add up. And pretty much everyone who was covering the team closely, right, on the beat level, whether it was Collar or Cronin, like, everybody was saying, oh, like, this isn't going to be a train wreck year, but this, like, you're for sure taking a step back. You're for sure taking a step back.
Yep.
And then when the Diggs thing happened, and by the way, like, they didn't know that Justin Jefferson was going to be this good right away. The hope was that he could maybe turn into Stephon Diggs in a couple years, but everything pointed toward, okay, you're not going to win the Super Bowl in 2020. Mm-hmm. And so from that standpoint, and you know what, if they had realized that and they had decided, all right, let's let it ride with Kirk into that final year of the contract. It doesn't mean that you're saying goodbye to Kirk. All kinds of quarterbacks get toward the end of contracts and then go back to their same teams, right? So you could have gotten to this point where we are right now, and Kirk could still be an option for you,
yeah,
in the game of musical chairs with quarterbacks, right?
100%.
Now, he would be looking around the league and saying, oh, my God, boy, San Francisco's got an opening. New Orleans might have an opening. The Rams are begging for a new quarterback. I got options, too. And so his price might go up just because of a bidding war. But if you had just rode out the last year of his contract because, you know, I don't know, we're probably not going to win the Super Bowl in 2020. Let's just give ourselves a chance to reset the key places after the year is over, then you could have your choice between drafting a first-round quarterback, re-signing Kirk Cousins, trading for Deshaun Watson. You just have all these options, right? Or, like, buying low on a Sam Darnold. Or if, and I wouldn't do this, but if you thought that Jimmy Garoppolo or Jared Goff are, like, reclamation projects, right? You would have all kinds of options. And people are going to say, well, why are you guys, the defense was the problem this year. Okay, yeah, the defense was terrible this year. And Kirk Cousins, you know, had a good second half. I don't care that Kirk Cousins was like the ninth best quarterback in the NFL. I'm not going to celebrate the fact that Kirk Cousins was like the ninth best quarterback in the NFL. You know what the ninth best quarterback in the NFL gets you? Watching championship weekend on your couch at home with the rest of the teams that have quarterbacks that are ninth, 12th, 15th, 20th, 30th, etc.
Yes. And if you are basically examining 2020 and saying the defense was the problem, all right? View this from 10,000 feet, though, and answer this question. Do you think the way that the Vikings currently operate is going to win a championship? That's the question. That's the question. So the question is not, boy, if the defense improves in 2021, this team can get back to the playoffs and it can maybe get to the divisional round, which was yesterday and wasn't that fun. That's not the question. The question is, does your team, your coaching staff, Spielman, do they operate on a plane that you says, or that you say, you know what, championship type caliber plane? And the answer, if you watch these games closely, is they don't. Look at the chess that the top teams play And the Vikings are playing really cool checkers. Really cool checkers.
They've actually been pretty adept checkers players.
Yeah, they're good. No, no.
Double jumps and everything.
But that's the problem in this town. This is the problem. We are so in love with, they're pretty good. Like, we fall in love with good. Good is not great. Why don't we have championships in the men's major sports here?
Because we're good at chess. We're good at checkers. And the championship games are played in chess form.
Parisian suitor sign. This is going to be great during the playoffs. We celebrate that. We celebrate the Vikings are back in the playoffs. Ain't that great? Oh, they beat the Saints. Isn't that great? You don't get to be great until you are on a plane with the teams. And the thinking, that's the important thing here. The thought process. So like, this is never about, to me, Phil, a straight rip on Cousins. Now, after games at times, it definitely is. But when we're talking about the philosophical approach to what the Minnesota Vikings do and how they try and execute things, this is a discussion about how do you get to the top of that mountain. And the Vikings thinking, which is why I propose that we come up with the Mackey and Judd rules for franchise success, because those are the rules that are going to define championships.
Mm-hmm. I also think, just to add a bow on what you're saying, because I don't know, I can't tell if this would be more compelling if we were like disagreeing on this. Like, we both agree 100% on this, that
we're tired. We're sick of good
in the case of the Minnesota Vikings. I'm not going to praise and commend good. Well, the Vikings were 11th in points offensively.
Yeah.
The Chiefs were number one. Like, the Bills were number two. I don't give a rip about 10th or 5th. Like, I want number one. That's what I'm talking about here. And so we just need to get over this fear of, well, what if we lose good? What if good turns to bad?
Okay.
It's all the same to me at this point. Now, I don't want bad for like 10 years, but I feel like the Wilf ownership is competent enough as professional sports owners.
Yep.
We're not talking about a Houston situation here or a Cleveland Brown situation. Like, that's a good ownership group that's not going to let a couple bad seasons of, oh, man, well, we took a step back and it kind of spiraled on us. That's not going to turn into, like, 15 years of Timberwolves basketball, right? Unless you think the Wilfs are Glenn Taylor or if you think the Wilfs are Jimmy Haslam. I don't. So I don't fear, well, what if you can't give up good. No, good is the enemy of great. Cliche, but it's true in this case. And I'm just sick of it, and it disappoints me that Deshaun Watson's going to go play for the Jets. Like, the Jets have put themselves in a position by being terrible for years and years, but they're just going to luck box their way into getting this franchise quarterback. And a team like the Vikings could use a guy like Deshaun Watson to go from good to great to win their first Super Bowl. And they can't because they've locked in too good at quarterback. So
the key is this. Unless you basically have a Hall of Fame QB, it's time for open quarterback marriages.
Yes.
It's
great for them,
Kirk,
too.
If you want to go spend the night with the Niners, we're fine with that.
Yeah.
If you want to go spend the night with McVay and the Rams, knock yourself out.
Yeah, it's amazing. Well, what if Kirk gets away? That's okay.
That's all right.
I gave Kirk permission to go hang out at the neighbors.
It's a key party with quarterbacks. It's a 1970s key party with quarterbacks.
Mackie and Judd on ScoreNorth.com and the Score North app.
Let's dive into statements here, boys. Statements from the weekend. Things you observed in football, in life,
football,
in Minnesota sports. Judd Zulgad, we'll start with you.
All right.
A lot of things to get to.
So much football. So much football. I'm going to rip the Band-Aid off immediately with statement one and say, Drew Brees, this is sad, Drew Brees violated the Zulgadian rule of sticking around 1 year too long. And I understand that he can beat up on bad teams still, and I get all that. But when they beat the crap out of the Vikings on Christmas Day, I watched that game and I thought to myself, some of those passes are fluttering a little bit. I don't really like this.
Yeah, and Kamara scored 14 touchdowns
exactly
in that game.
And then I sat down for the entirety of yesterday's game and watched that. And I just said, really? So this is my lasting impression now. Thanks a lot, Drew. I mean,
would they have won that game if Jameis Winston started?
they would have given themselves a chance because he could throw the deep ball. Like, I think he probably would have screwed the pooch, but I'm not quite sure about that.
And of course, people are going to be like, well, yeah, he would have thrown three picks. I mean, Drew Brees threw picks.
Right. But I mean, Phil, trying to watch him throw the ball by now is just sad. I mean, there is zero zip. There is zero arm strength left. The brain is still very much there. And he can process exactly what he wants to do and what he could do for years, but the will to do it and the actual physical execution is long gone. I just thought, you know what, this is just another in a long line of great players to add to the Zolgad bin of, man, I wish that you had taken the David Ortiz route and went out with a really nice year.
Yeah.
Watching that was sad.
You know what the most depressing, insulting thing for Drew Brees was yesterday? It wasn't the game-changing interception toward the end. It wasn't the fact that he had this sort of sad walk off the field and was blowing kisses to the handful of fans that were there.
Yep.
I don't know if you guys saw the video from James Palmer, I think NFL Network. So James was covering the game, and he was filming Tom Brady and Drew Brees after they had gotten done with all their postgame stuff. They came back out in their street clothes, and Drew Brees' wife and kids were on the field.
Yep.
And so a couple guys who are in their 40s are just probably talking about Drew Brees' career. Tom Brady's got a football, and they're probably standing at like the 10, 15-yard line. And one of Drew Brees' kids runs a fade route toward the back pylon.
It makes a nice catch.
And one of his other kids was playing defense, and Tom Brady drops back and throws an absolute dime, just a perfect drop in the bucket to Drew Brees' kid in the back of the end zone, 2 feet in for a touchdown, and then goes back to talking to Drew Brees. Tom Brady is older. He looks younger, and he's throwing dimes to Drew Brees' kids in the back of the end zone.
He's got more hair.
Brees can't even throw the ball 10 yards down the field.
He's got more hair than Drew Brees. Yeah, no.
Tom turned around and gave Drew Brees' wife a big kiss on the lips and walked out of the field.
Brees' wife had left with Brady? What if she had walked out with Brady? See ya, Drew and the kids.
We'll be in touch.
Yeah, well, I'm going to Tampa. Bye. Bye. Love you.
All right, Declan, you're next.
My first one is the Furious Rallies are back. The Minnesota Wild rallied again on Saturday night for another overtime winner after playing basically putrid hockey for the first, 45 minutes of that game?
Yeah,
the first opening shift of the third period wasn't looking too kind for them.
Yeah.
And then they rally Marcus Johansson, who has just been god-awful throughout the last up until that overtime shift. He's been terrible.
Not according to the Panther.
And then totally redeems himself with a overtime winner, and the Wild are now 2-0 on the season. Look out, West Division, because the Wild are coming.
So I remember it being a topic even like a handful of years ago that in overtime, it was always just because of politics. You always start with, like, Mikko Koivu would be out there in overtime sometimes.
Yeah, with Parisi and Suter.
Yeah, you'd want your
Clydesdales.
Your veteran.
The Clydesdales would be clumping out there. Hey, where'd that guy go?
The Kentucky Derby, and you got three Clydesdales running. And now it seems like, so Zach Parise has he not played in overtime in either of these two games?
No, because they scored quickly in the first one, and then I actually charted the combinations in OT on Saturday, and he did not play. Suter played once, and Parise never touched the ice.
Interesting.
In the entire OT, which I believe, Dex, went pretty long. I think that they were late when Johansson scored. So, no, Zach was not in the rotation for the overtime.
Speed is the... Isn't it fair to say that speed more than anything
absolutely.
Else, right?
Yes.
3-on-3.
Speed, it's two things. It's your speed and ability to possess the puck.
Yeah,
those are your absolutely two key things.
The defense is out the question here. You're trying to end the game. So we are going to create a 3-on-3 situation. If that means you're having only one-way players, that is totally okay because Fiala and Kaprizov are going to fly up and down the ice. Even Johansson, too, can fly up and down the ice.
So were there also... I also feel like there were times at different points in the last few years where they would have, like, two defensemen and a forward out there in overtime, too.
It wasn't good, okay?
Yeah.
They've won...
Brodeen and Spurgeon out with Mikko, it would be awful.
So each of the last years, they won... In each year, they won three overtime games total. In each year, they have won two overtime games so far, two games. Oh my
God. What do you guys make of this? You guys were talking before the show that their schedule is pretty weak coming out of the gate here. So, like, they could rack up some wins. How good do you think they are independent of a potential week schedule, just watching the first two games and seeing that, okay, Kaprizov is the real deal. This guy's going to make an impact.
There.
How good do you think they are?
Judd.
If they play the Sharks, the Kings, the Ducks, or the Coyotes, I think they're pretty good. Once they play the other three teams in the division, which are the Blues, the Golden Knights, and the Avs, I think it's going to be difficult. I can't say this enough, and it's going to be at some point in time a broken record on my part. They don't have a center. Like, they don't have a guy. They might not have a second-line guy. They don't have a top-line guy without question. Bonino, Eriksson Ek, go down that line. Those guys are third-line guys, and they're fine there. But, Phil, they essentially are going to try to beat teams without anything that resembles an ace pitcher. How about that?
Yeah.
Like, they're going to, it's going to be, in that sense, it's going to be the 2012 Twins.
Yeah, and if that's the case, then you need to be special in other areas. Yeah,
it's basically having two elite relievers in Kaprizov and Fiala and no starting pitching. Yeah. That's kind of like what it is, basically. You have two flamethrowers who are going to carry you through high leverage situations, but if you can't get to the high leverage situation, you're going to be in trouble.
So they really should be doing anything and everything in the next like 12 months to find a top line center.
I think you do it now. I think, and the deadline I believe is in March. I don't know if it's maybe
the
late
trade
February.
Deadline. I think it might be early.
Yeah,
April
a little early
this year. They've changed,
but
it.
There is a trade deadline, and you might have to kick the tires on it.
Football.
It depends if you think you're good enough, and I don't know if they are. That's the question.
Yeah. Well, they've at least thrown a fun little jolt into the winter sports season.
God knows we need something in this town.
All right. Well, actually, good segue, because we have something else. The Gopher basketball team, I'm going to say the Gopher basketball team is as good now as it's been under Richard Pitino in, I believe, 7 years.
Which team? The one that plays at home or the one that plays on the road?
And I get they've gotten smoked in four road games. It's super weird.
It's awful.
But they just played 9 consecutive games against teams that are guaranteed to go to the NCAA tournament. 8 conference games, and then the game against St. Louis. St. Louis is going to the NCAA tournament, too. And they finished 5-4 in those games. Now, as Judd said, like 3 of the losses, or maybe all of the losses, I think it was like 3 of them, were road blowouts. And at some point, you're going to have to fix that. What's weird is they don't have the barn advantage like you normally would. Like, they're winning these games at home, and it's not like, sometimes it feels like the atmosphere and fans being right on top of the players, and it can psych opposing teams out. Well, it's not like there's a bunch of noise being made, so they're just playing well at home. But they've got, like, Marcus Carr can get a shot whenever he wants to. So Liam Robbins is just apparently just a sniper three-point shooter from the top of the key and just daggers
teams. And if he decides he wants to play hard, he's really good, but there's times where he gets blown off the ball. Like, that confuses me.
Yeah, it's, I don't know. Well, I also saw a note today, too. So he transferred from Drake, and Drake is, like, 13-0 to start the season. And some was speculating, what if he had stayed at Drake? Like, Drake would be like a Final Four, mid-major Cinderella team. But the Gophers, I don't think anyone really expected anything big going into the season. And because they have so many transfer players and young players that no one's watched before, it's like Marcus Carr and Gabe Kalscher are like the two players anyone has heard of on this team going into the year. And they're super fun to watch. They play at a ridiculously fast pace when they want to. And I think Marcus Carr is one of the most exciting players in the last like 15 years ago for basketball. So super fun to watch, but don't get beat by 30 on the road. I will agree with you on that.
So in the 4 games at home that they've won, average margin of victory for the Gophers in the Big Ten, I should say, 4 games, 16.5 points, okay?
Yeah. Wow. I mean, they've killed Michigan yesterday.
They've lost, of course, all 4 Big Ten games that they've played on the road. Average margin of defeat, 19.8 points. Like, think about that swing.
Yeah, it's aggressive. I'm looking up the rankings here, too. So College Hoops rankings, let's see, week 8. I think this is week 8. Gonzaga, number 1. This is the AP. Gophers, has this changed? No, they're 23rd. This is not, I feel like this hasn't changed yet today. They're 19th in the coaches poll. The Big Ten, let's go off the coaches poll here. Michigan, 5th. Let's count all the Big Ten teams. Michigan, 5th. Iowa, 8th. Wisconsin, 9th.
Yep.
Illinois, 13th.
Yep.
Minnesota, 19th. And then that's it. There's like Ohio State is the next team out, and then Rutgers is like 2 or 3 teams out. So they've got half the conference is knocking on the door of of top 25. It was fun to watch.
Football.
So this comes from a move that now that the Saints have been eliminated from the playoffs, I think it's going to happen in the next day or two. And this is the most football-y football move by this football team of all time. The hiring of Dan Campbell, when it's announced, will be the most Lions hire ever. The most Dan Campbell.
Who Come on! Football!
Barbed wire tattoo guy.
Who, if I recall, was in charge of, I believe he got the interim job, if I'm not mistaken, with the Dolphins back a few years.
He did.
And he was Dan Campbell. I'm going to bring you the brutal truth about our football team. And then we're going to go lift weights and watch 1980s National Football League games with big shoulder pads on. Cause my name's Dan Campbell.
Neck rolls.
Honest
for everybody.
To God. Okay. This guy might be good, but if you're the Lions, what are you doing? This is the most Lions hire of all time. Like of all of the guys that you could have gone and talked to and hired, right? Cerebral, young, old, different from Patricia. You hire the meathead hire. Like what? What the hell? You're supposed to be changing your culture, and you go with Dan Campbell, who I guarantee you is going to be slamming his headphones on the sidelines on week one, throwing his clipboard and telling the Lions, this is how Dan Campbell plays football.
I feel like usually what happens is you fire one type of coach, and then you go to the complete opposite, right? That happens
That's
almost
100%
all the time.
Right. Yes, sir.
It kind of feels like the Lions, they know that they whiffed on the defensive-minded, hard-nosed guy, and they decided, let's just run that back again. Let's actually try that again. Get the tough-minded guy with barbed wire tattoos. Why not get the cerebral guy that can take Matt Stafford to the next level? I don't know. But you know what? As long as the Lions are making idiot decisions, it's good for the Vikings.
It's true.
Because it's just a guaranteed two-game. It should be anyways. A guaranteed two wins on your schedule.
Yeah.
Go look up Dan Campbell. Dan Campbell during his playing days, too. He had like the long Fabio blonde hair. Yeah. The barbed wire tattoos.
He fits in perfect.
Man, good luck to the Lions.
Football.
All right, second statement. It's another wild one. It's shots on goals don't really matter, but high danger chances do.
Wow.
So we're going to get analytical.
Declan,
we're getting
woke
nerdy
up
here.
Feeling dangerous this morning.
Yeah, I do.
Very cerebral.
So high danger chances created. The Minnesota Wild have the best high danger chances created percentage in the NHL, meaning they are creating chances and they're also allowing the lowest amount of high danger chances. So through two games, small sample size, but 76% of high danger chances created, the Minnesota Wild lead the NHL through those first two games. So Kaprizov and Fiala, who are creating a ton of traffic in front of the net, right in front of the goalie, that's a high danger percentage situation. On the back end of the defense for Minnesota, which is their bread and butter, their defense is unbelievable. They have not allowed high danger chances to go in front of Cam Talbot. Therefore, they're making it easier on their goaltender. So I don't know if that formula is going to work long term, but Fiala and Kaprizov, what they're able to do creating high danger chances right now, it's noticeable. You also see it on the ice. This isn't just like, oh, a nerd stat and I don't match. It doesn't match with the eye test. If you've watched the Wild through two games, it's those two players literally creating so much traffic in front of the net, and it's resulting in goals.
What's the number one skill set offensively in hockey to get to the high danger areas? Is it just having guys who can control the puck through traffic? Because obviously the opposing team is trying to prevent you from skating with the puck into those areas,
right,
and passing the puck into those areas, right? So you have to just have guys who are skilled enough to get to those areas.
Yeah. I'd say it's three things. It's one, speed; two, an ability to be elusive; and three, our favorite thing, grit. Because you're going to get beat up there.
Football.
Like, that becomes the question. Are you talented and gutsy? Because if you get to the places that Dex is talking about, you're going to get your ass kicked eventually. And at that point in time, do you stay there or do you say, I'm out? Because, yes, it takes skill to get there, but it takes grits and gut to stay there.
I like it. I love, like, things like that sort of translate to, what should I be watching for when I'm watching a Wild game? And I think high danger and eliminating high danger defensively is something fun to watch. But I'm also a stat nerd like Declan. So
football.
All right, next statement. Andy Reid has grapefruits the size of a blimp.
Yes.
Last night.
Yes.
backup quarterback Chad Henne comes in because Pat Mahomes was seeing stars. And it sounds like it's not as bad as maybe people thought right away when he was being helped up the field. And hopefully he can play this weekend because,
he'll play.
Man, that will be fun if we get that matchup.
He better play.
So backup quarterback Chad Henne comes in. Fourth down and one. Season's on the line. You could just punt and make, you've gotten a couple stops on Baker Mayfield. You know, you could just punt the ball and make Baker Mayfield go, 90 yards with no timeouts and like a minute to go, and he's got to score a touchdown. That would be what the Vikings do, right? Let's just trust our defense and let's just punt the ball. And, well, knowing the Vikings special teams, probably get the punt blocked or something and come back the other way. But not Andy Reid, not grapefruits the size of blimp Andy Reid. He calls a pass play. The geniusness, though, because it felt like one of those classic situations where you're just going to fake like you're going to run a play, and then you're going to let the play clock
run
out.
Like Tony said.
Yep. Tony Romo
there's
was
no
like, there's no chance.
Jim.
No chance.
Look at the body language.
And instead, they made a concerted effort. They've practiced this. They went up there trying to show body language of, like, we're not going to run a play, right? It was like double reverse psychology. With your backup quarterback, and he calls a pass. Also, I know that the interception in the end zone was just a terrible play call and throw all around, but it also shows you Andy Reid was not messing around yesterday. He's like, I don't care who my quarterback is. We're throwing deep. We're throwing on fourth down, and we're not going to give the ball back to these guys. We're going to end this game because, damn it, I don't care what you think. I loved it. I think it's great, and I love the aggressive play calling. So,
and there are, you know, if you look at this, how many coaches out there who do care, who think, oh, man, if this call goes wrong, the media is going to hammer me and my owner will read it right and yeah. It's going to be problems. Andy Reid, I think, went through so much in his first job in Philly that he is, as I told you off the air, Phil Mackey, out of bleeps. He is out of bleeps.
And he's got his title.
Yep.
He's got his legacy. And now he's... The only thing that matters to him now is I want to win more Super Bowls.
Yep. Yeah.
So I'm going to be hyper aggressive and just push the needle and win Super Bowls. And there it is. If they punt that ball back to Cleveland, I don't know that it's a guarantee that Cleveland gets in a position to win the game, but it's much more of like a white knuckle ride.
Why?
Also,
why did Cleveland punt to them is my question the first time.
Yeah. So somebody, I follow a couple of those like fourth down punt bots on Twitter.
Oh, yeah.
And one of them said, or somebody who like runs one that has like a sort of a human element to their tweets, said our model shows that fourth and eight you should go for it. Fourth and nine is like really borderline here. So,
but the time left, which was
4 minutes,
4:23 left.
And you had one timeout,
and you yes, exactly right,
yeah.
Exactly right. Fourth and nine. Now it's I get it. At your 32, so that's certainly not optimal. But 4:23 left.
See, I think
you've got to know that Reid might do something.
I think if Mahomes was still the quarterback, I think they for sure go for it.
100%.
I think they thought, boy, with Chad Henne, they're just going to run the ball and we'll just stop it. And Andy Reid, well, they did get super lucky on that 3rd and 14, and Chad Henne saw daylight. I mean, that's what put him in position to go for it on 4th and 1. You know, if he gets stopped 5 yards short of the line of scrimmage there, then they do punt. So Cleveland got a little unlucky there, but I don't know. Maybe they should have put a spy on Chad Henne. Maybe that's the move.
Football.
Off that same game. And I think we've actually had this conversation on Mackey and Judd maybe 2 or 3 years back, but it's worth having the conversation again. The fumbling out of the end zone rule, which bit the Browns in the ass, okay, which went from being close to a Browns touchdown to Chiefs ball 1st and 10 on the Browns or on their own 20, I'm sorry, is one of the stupidest, most unexplainable rules that you can possibly have. So you're telling me that if the guy who fumbled the ball, I believe his name was Rashard Higgins, if he had fumbled the ball out of bounds at the 3-yard line for KC, that is then the ball maintains Browns possession at the 3.
Yes.
But because he fumbled it while trying to reach for the pylon and it went around the pylon and out of bounds, that is change of possession, Kansas City ball at their 20. This rule makes no sense.
What do you mean? Like, I tweeted out something. What do you mean? A lot of people saying, "Well, you got to know the rule."
That's what I kept getting back. The rule's the rule. No, it's a stupid rule, and I've been saying it for years. And I don't care who won that game. How is that? How do we suddenly change possession because of where the ball leaves the field of play?
It's a super weird loophole. It doesn't make any sense. Why don't they just make it a blanket rule? If you're on offense and you fumble the ball forward, the ball just and the opposing team doesn't recover.
Yes.
The ball just comes back to the spot of the fumble,
which is where it is for 100 yards.
Yes.
And then we decide, I just don't get it because if the ball works its way around the pylon basically and goes out of bounds, that changes the possession?
It's super weird. Couldn't they also have a rule?
I don't get it.
I would just say, listen, any offensive fumble, the ball can't be advanced. If you recover it 40 yards down the field because it just got kicked and kicked, great. Go back to where, right? But if they aren't going to just do the logical thing, which is that, why don't they say, listen, this sucks for you. If you started that play at the 20-yard line, this sucks. But like, if you fumble out of the end zone, the ball goes back to the original line of scrimmage. And you get the ball back. But it's like the play never happened.
You should not lose the ball.
No.
I agree.
And by the way, not only do you lose the ball, but the opposing team, instead of having the ball like in the shadow of their own end zone, they just get to take it out to the 20?
Right.
What?
It's absolutely stupid. And so the flaw to me is this, because fans will say, well, Belichick tells his guys to not reach the ball out there because if it goes out, it's okay. Do you guys recall a Viking-Packer game at the Metrodome years ago? And I believe Robert Ferguson caught a deep pass, and he was...
For which team?
For the Vikings. And he was at like the 20 or 15, and he is going into the end zone. And the Packer cornerback makes a nice play and gets behind him and punches the ball out.
Mm-hmm.
So the ball starts to roll at, let's say, the 20. It starts to roll, and it's rolling. Literally, if that ball had taken a left turn a bit and gone out of bounds at the 8. It's Vikings ball at the 8.
Yes.
I believe. But it didn't. It went through the end zone and out of bounds.
Yeah.
And the ball went to Green Bay. Like, that's an art. What? Why?
It's super weird.
Like, what are you doing?
No, it doesn't make any sense.
Just change the rule.
And, like, well, hey, and that's a different type of play because that was kind of a fluke, right? But that's what can happen. Don't reach
the ball out.
Why? Like, why should we be? Why are we so nuanced with? Well, if, don't reach the ball out because a dumb rule might bite you in the ass. Just change the rule.
And this league, week after week, year after year, right, emphasizes offense. We want scoring. We want scoring. But don't try and score because if you fumble, you're screwed.
Exactly.
Football.
All right, my final statement, football one. I tweeted this out yesterday, too, or I believe on Saturday after the Bills game. You can root for Stephon Diggs and be thankful for Justin Jefferson. I don't understand why we have to have this such animosity towards Stephon Diggs. He's having fun out there. He's elevating another franchise, which was just as gone through heartbreak and as much pain as the Vikings have and the Buffalo Bills. I'm enjoying watching Stephon Diggs ball out. I mean, the last like 5 games, he's going for over 100 yards. He's made Josh Allen look like a franchise game-changing quarterback. I don't know why you wouldn't want to root for someone like that. I know his exit was a little messy. Do you want to go back does he even want to go back and redo some of the things that he had to do to get out of here? Probably. Maybe he does. The way he acted was pretty childish. I get that. But I'm thoroughly enjoying watching Stephon Diggs ball out. And if Mahomes is indeed healthy, which I'm guessing he'll be, that's going to be one of the most fun championship games I think we're ever going to see. I'm really excited for it.
Some of it's Josh Allen just like getting into year 3 and improving on his own, but his completion percentage has gone up like 10% from last year.
Yeah, he was not an accurate
passer. Ridiculous.
And
he's not the most accurate sniper passer now, but
true.
But Stephon Diggs can make anyone look really accurate.
He absolutely loves that guy. Dex is exactly right. Like, it's great to watch. And by the way, again, if you are a Viking fan, take notes. Diggs means to get out probably was not the best, but he was exactly right. Like, watch him now.
Correct.
Watch him now. That could have been him here, or it could be Jefferson here. Like, that's what you could have.
Yep. His main point, and he wasn't super public, like, he didn't lay this all out publicly because he wanted to sort of keep some of this internal. Now, obviously, his feelings leaked out publicly because he skipped practice for a couple days, and I wasn't in love with some of that. But his main point wasn't, I need the ball more, throw me the damn ball, Keyshawn Johnson, right. Terrell Owens, etc. There might be a little of that because he definitely wants to maximize his own personal value as a football player. Mm-hmm. But in his mind, it was, we as a team aren't maximizing our ability to score points offensively. And what you're watching in Buffalo for a million different reasons, and I get that they only scored, this is another thing, like, well, high-octane offense, they scored 10 offensive points in that game. It was windy, it was cold, Baltimore scored 3, like, it was a low-scoring climate. The Bills were the second-highest scoring team in the NFL this year, in large part because they throw the damn ball. And they throw it much like the Chiefs in situations where most teams get all conservative and try to milk clock and establish the run and trust their defense, and the Bills and the Chiefs are like, screw that. We're throwing to these weapons. And we got these mobile, dynamic quarterbacks. This is going to be great. And Stephon Diggs, he wanted that. He chased it. He got it. And in return, the Vikings also got a great end on of the deal here. Like, Justin Jefferson might be better. And they got additional
but
resources.
Use him like that.
Agreed.
Like, that's the thing now. Learn your lesson.
Yep. And last statement here. As long as Mahomes comes back, there isn't one bad potential Super Bowl matchup. Mm-hmm. I mean, the worst one might be like, I don't know, Rodgers versus Josh Allen. Like, that's probably a couple of like really small markets. But that's still an awesome Super Bowl. If we get Bills versus Packers, and it's Rodgers and Josh Allen, and it's Davante Adams and Stephon Diggs, and you got one franchise that is looking to win its first Super Bowl ever, and then you got another one that's trying to get Aaron Rodgers, you know, another one on his mantle. I mean, that's the worst storyline. And then you've got these other ones like Brady versus Mahomes, even Brady versus Rodgers in the championship game. So I'm super pumped for this weekend, and whoever winds up winning, it's going to be a must-watch Super Bowl.
So what's ideal? Kansas City, probably. I like the Bills, but Kansas City's probably ideal from my end.
I mean, Mahomes, Brady.
You know what? I'm sorry. For this year, I got to go Packers Chiefs.
Yeah.
Rodgers, Mahomes to me. Oh, that could be classic.
We should do a Mount Rushmore ranking this week of the four best potential matchups. There could be four, right? I mean, I don't think there could be more than four. So like we should rank all four of them.
Let's actually do a segment where Declan just tries to figure out the math on how many potential matchups there are.
Yeah.
Let's
Declan
add a potential fifth team too, Dex.
Yes.
Let's throw another team in just to screw
team.
With your head.
Triple threat. Triple threat Super Bowl.
Let's throw in the Colts music.
Oh, my God.
Let's say the Jets could make it.
The Jets have Deshaun Watson.
What the hell is Drew Brees doing here?
Drew Brees and that noodle arm. Get that thing out of here.
But he's got a chair.
Get that thing out of here.
Oh, no, it's a rocking chair.
Tom Brady stole his wife. Get them out of here.
What? Oh, my God.
It's all good.
All right. Those are your Mackie and Judd statements here. And we do them every Monday, and we bounce around, as you can see. So,
Mackie and Judd on ScoreNorth.com and the Score North app.
Woo! All right. Every Monday on the show, and I think we're going to just do this throughout the rest of the year until we get loaded up again on football season next year. But, you know, now that football season is winding down, we have a little more time to watch other things and to catch up on other shows. And we're very eclectic, well-cultured people. You know, like, I watch a lot of Netflix and documentaries. Declan watches all kinds of crazy stuff. Judd watches a lot of NHL Network. So
you're talking about eclectic.
We've always got stuff to share
Jamie
with you
Hirsch,
guys.
Mike Rupp.
Mike Rupp.
Damn right I'm eclectic.
So let's make a couple laps around the room here. What are we watching this week of January 18th, 2021, Declan?
Last night, I got right into the Tiger Woods documentary. This is some pretty crazy stuff. And I know his agent put out a thing like right after the first one aired, because this is now, it's a two-part series. Part two launched last night. I did not catch part one when it launched last weekend. And his agent put out a thing immediately saying, you know, this is all salacious. This is all untrue. Another attempt to smear Tiger Woods. And look, there might be some of that.
People, like, there's been attempts to smear Tiger Woods.
So it's based
he admitted
off,
to everything that happened like 11 years ago.
Exactly.
Yeah, Perkins tried to smear him.
So it's based off a book that was written 2 years ago about this whole situation.
Yeah, the Armin Katayan book.
So he cited, the agent cited that too. However, It is fascinating. So the first part of the doc is mostly just about his upbringing, his rise to the first Grand Slam, and then also, yeah, his personal life in high school. And like one of the main characters who's being interviewed in the vignettes is Dina. Dina was like Tiger Woods' first high school girlfriend, Dina Gravel. And
okay.
It just like shows you, she was like, saw this compassionate side of Tiger, like this wholesome kid, not like this uber hyper focused machine that all I have to do is focus on golf, golf, golf. And this is even a spoiler. I think this is like what was one of the craziest parts of the whole doc is there's one part where like Tiger was in high school, like because he did Dina for like 3 years throughout like the majority of high school. And Tiger like slept over at his house and he lied to his parents about it, like every other high school kid did. At least everyone attempted to do
Tiger
that.
Tiger slept over at her house?
Yeah, at her house when they were in high school. And his parents figured out. His parents were obviously upset, but took it to this insane another level. And Tiger had to write her a letter, basically breaking up with her. And she still has the letter, by the way. This
what?
Wasn't just a paraphrase.
Oh,
she
I'd
shows
sell
the letter.
That sucker.
She shows the letter and she says, "It's in my best interest from my family side and my personal side to never talk to you again."
What?
And breaks up with her.
His old man was,
what?
Yeah.
And she was
that
like,
makes
all,
sense.
All I wanted was just to like, I wanted him to say it because I knew it. His parents basically brainwashed him to say this because there's videos too. There's like home videos of like Tiger at her house, like dancing and having a good time and like being like kind of not Tiger Woods, like just being a normal 16-year-old goofy kid.
Dude.
And she even touches on, like, when he came over to my house, it was a completely different Tiger. He was loose. He liked to have fun. He was joking. He smiled. And it's insane, dude. It's 90 minutes long. The second one's also 90 minutes. I started dozing
off. How many parts?
Two. I think it's just
so it's
two.
Just two parts?
It's just two parts. So it's a total of 3 hours combined, but each episode's
okay.
90 minutes.
Right. Oh,
so,
my
so
God.
So the first part is his rise in his youth and through the first Grand Slam. The second part is where his dad dies and things spiral out of control. The divorce from Elin. Elin's also involved in the second documentary. And
so they interview Elin in this thing.
Apparently, yeah. They show a little vignette right at the end of the first.
She couldn't have done that for free, right?
Oh God, no.
I don't know how HBO operates.
Yeah, Stevie Williams is involved in it. He's interviewed
nice.
A lot.
Are Tiger and Steve Williams? I should know this. I'm the Tiger guy,
yeah.
And I don't have HBO Max right now. But this will cause me to get HBO Max. Are Tiger and Steve Williams on good terms? I think they are.
Steve
Williams still caddies once in a while.
Yeah, I think they're on good terms. So there's one other guy, and I forget his name off the top of my head, and you might know him, but he was Earl Woods' like best friend and like also his like Tiger's coach growing up. And he tells this story and he even goes, he has to pause and says, he's not going to like when I'm going to tell you. Like I need a minute here. I got to compose myself. Tiger's not going to like this. The quote is, "I'm really sorry, champ, for what I'm about to say."
What?
And he goes into detail about when Earl was training Tiger on the course as a young kid, Earl used to bring this Winnebago around to like the golf course. I think the Naval Academy golf course where he learned basically to play golf. And Earl Woods would basically facilitate and get attractive women to go in the Winnebago with them to have a couple drinks. And that he basically said Tiger seeing that as a young kid and as a young adult going into adulthood set him up for failure because he saw his father was unfaithful, foreshadowing to what happens to Tiger Woods in the late 2000s.
Wow,
it's mind-blowing, dude.
This sounds really
It's really good.
I need to see this. So, okay, so many questions of this. So Tiger Woods has a net worth of $800 million, according to Forbes. And I think that's after. I don't know how they had to split that with him and Elin, but he's got a net worth of $800 million.
Mm-hmm.
He's one of the most successful athletes in American history. He's famous, right?
Yep.
Would you guys give up everything that he gave up? So basically, like, any semblance of a normal childhood, a marriage, like, train wrecked. His image was trash for years and years. I think he's repaired it now, right? Would you guys give up all of those things or have all of those stains to have what he ultimately has in the end in his mid-40s, which is a ton of money and fame and, you know, in terms of, like, professional success, you know, more than anybody?
The adult side, I would. The problem is the childhood side. Because if you get screwed up as a kid, you're basically screwed up for life, potentially. So I actually, I think going through what he did as an adult could be doable to end up with as much as he certainly has, but I don't think it would be worth it to have a childhood that was probably miserable. Like that Man. Would be that would be so dysfunctional.
There was one last part. There's another situation too with this Naval Academy guy, Earl Woods' best friend, where he taught them hypnosis as a kid to like basically hyper focus when he's golfing. So that's
Earl
why
taught him that, or
the consultant, his friend.
All right. So that's why he's just like. Especially Sunday at a major, he never changes expressions for 5 hours.
And then also when people would be golfing, like Earl Woods would always mess with Tiger as a kid. So he'd be like trying to putt, maybe jingling keys. He would hit his putter as he's in his backstroke, all these little psychological things.
Wow.
So that when the time came for him to be Tiger Woods and rise up to be the greatest golfer of all time, you can see that it doesn't bother him.
See, that's one thing about golf. I love golf. I'm not very good at it. I golf a lot, and I still shoot 90. Like, I'm not good at golf. One thing I wish that they would change in golf, and I always, like, if I'm golfing with a group, I always say, if you guys want to keep talking and stuff, I don't care. Like, if there's a good conversation going on, we should just turn golf into what the Waste Management Open is on the 16th hole, the par 3, where people want to make noise. Let's just have a steady buzz throughout the entire
club
tournament.
Flips.
Yeah, I'm
great
down
shot
for it.
Do a club flip.
Yeah,
yeah. I mean, guys do that already. I think guys have got a little more loosey goosey with how they celebrate now. That's one thing I would change for sure. Let's not have to be pin drop silent.
This sounds really good though.
You got to watch it.
All right. Yeah,
okay.
I'll try and find it.
Okay, that is for sure on the list. Have you guys seen? So HBO Max, right?
HBO Max.
Have you guys seen on Netflix The Queen's Gambit?
I have not.
Dawn watched the entire thing in like 2 days.
And you didn't watch any of it?
I have not. I did not watch it.
Dude, it is.
She said it's great, though.
It's based on a novel by an author named Walter Tevis. And I'll just read you the series information from Netflix because it does a better job than I could. It's a story that explores the true cost of genius. Abandoned and entrusted to a Kentucky orphanage in the late 1950s, a young Beth Harmon discovers an astonishing talent for chess while developing an addiction to tranquilizer pills provided by the state as a sedative for the children.
All right.
Haunted by her personal demons and fueled by a cocktail of narcotics and obsession, Beth transforms into an impressively skilled and glamorous outcast while determined to conquer the traditional boundaries established in the male-dominated world of competitive chess. So she becomes, out of nowhere, one of the greatest chess players of all time,
mm-hmm.
while like dealing with drug addiction and these things, and it's freaking awesome. I think I saw something right after this came out in like November. The numbers of people who have bought like chess boards and chess related things on Amazon and eBay spiked for 2 or 3
Didn't
weeks.
You say like the Google SEO term for chess was up like 300% when the week it came out.
Wow. Yeah, so this series has gotten people into chess. It's one season. It's easy to binge. It's like 8 episodes or 10 episodes or something. And I think it's awesome. And if you've played chess at all ever in your life, it's interesting just to see like.
I've never played chess.
You've never once in your life played chess?
I think my parents tried to teach me once and I was like, this is boring.
I learned in junior, like.
Because you hate games.
Because it's another stupid game. I'm like, I don't want to play a game.
Totally.
So Queen's Gambit for sure. Judd, you got anything?
Yeah, I do. So I spent the entire weekend, as I said before, on my couch watching sports. So I'm going to give you one thing.
Mm-hmm.
One thing about this, okay? Dan Dokic, who did analysis on the Gopher game on Saturday, is basically doing a hot take radio show from his home office there that's masquerading as analysis of basketball.
Okay, because I had the game on mute. I was just watching
God.
I didn't hear his analysis.
He spent the first half destroying Marcus Carr. What's that shot? That's a terrible shot. You got to pass more. He's starting to pass more now. That's better. He was like coaching and hot taking the entire game. It was
hilarious.
Yeah,
I love it. Dude, like one thing.
The greatest part is he's ripping these college kids up and down, and people on Twitter are freaking out. It's hilarious because he just doesn't hold back, and he keeps getting more and more pissed off.
I think that's awesome, and I just because when they went to halftime and the Gophers were up, whatever it was, they get to halftime, and I had this epiphany. They go to the studio, right? And it's been the same formula at halftime of college basketball games and college football games, and ESPN's the most guilty because they have the most of these games. And it's a studio host guy and then two former players. All of them are in suits, and the two former players are both holding pens or highlighters because they're taking notes and they're jotting things down that they observed in the first half.
Yep.
Let's get thoughts from this guy who coached and is now jobless, but we employed him. What did you think about the first half? Boy, Minnesota was great in transition. If they can keep that up in the second half, they're going to have a chance to hold on and beat Michigan. It's like, what's a better way? Like, you got 10 minutes. It's halftime. You got 10 minutes to entertain us, right?
Yeah.
Can we be better in that 10-minute space?
I'm flipping, so I don't care.
Let's have some fun in that 10-minute space.
I'm flipping around.
What can we do? I'll put a T-shirt on.
Do you know what's really old?
Why are you wearing a suit and a tie?
To me, the oldest thing now, Fox's NFL pregame halftime show.
Yeah.
Which used to be this sort of, hey, they're funny, cutting edge, right? And like they did, they took those shows down a path that they hadn't gone. And I liked it at the time. But it's basically the same guy still. It's like, here's Terry, Howie, and Jimmy, and they're still funny. They're 75 years old, but they're still funny.
Yeah, they're all wearing orthopedic shoe inserts.
I mean, speaking of find something different, it's like, you know, we're going to now go for this wacky bit.
It's true. It is antiquated.
It's like, just find something new.
It is antiquated.
You found that, find something new.
Dex, what else are you watching this week?
So on Saturday night, late Saturday night, after the Wild game, which went until 11:30 because it was on the West Coast and they went to overtime, I got into season 8 of ER.
Wow.
The medical drama.
Season 8?
Season 8. And this is
just randomly?
Well, yeah, why 8?
Not necessarily randomly.
Doug Ross is gone by then, right? Clooney's gone by then?
Clooney's gone. This is the Dr. Green, Anthony Edwards brain tumor comes back season.
Oh, God. Yeah.
Okay.
So even, I would even say that Anthony Edwards' death in ER is more traumatizing than as Goose in Top Gun.
I don't remember his death in ER. I think I had stopped watching by then. Once Clooney was out, I think I was out.
That's what I was going to say. Why season 8?
I watched this show all the time when I was a kid with my mom. So I remember some of these seasons, like around this time. But yeah, his cancer comes back and it's just like heartbreaking. It's still a really good medical drama show.
Dude, they had
I loved it. I was up to like 4 in the morning watching it.
I know people are going to say Grey's Anatomy is like the peak of TV medical, but man, when they had ER and Chicago Hope just back and forth on
Mandy
NBC
Patinkin.
And CBS,
yep.
Right? That's the 90s
old school
are...
Dex, Saint Elsewhere.
Okay.
Real old
medical
school.
Medical show
from the 80s. Denzel Washington as a
oh,
young
wow.
man
really
Whoa.
Was on it for and it's a it at that time
who else was in
it's
that
it's a
show?
Great cast it's a great cast.
How many seasons
it
I've
moves a little bit
it.
Slow but it's really really good
all right saying
dialogue
elsewhere.
Is great
oh initial release 1980 so 82 through
yes.
88
and the last
Howie Mandel
and the last show is a shocker I won't give
like
away
the
secret
series,
honestly
the
yes
finale.
Yes
okay
it's a shocker
So I'm probably not going to go through and watch Saint Elsewhere. I'm going to give a pause for people that don't want this to be spoiled, but I would like Judd to spoil this for us. Unless Dex, are you going to go back?
Go ahead and spoil it.
Spoil it. Okay, if you don't want it to be spoiled, stop listening.
All right.
Okay, now that those people are gone, spoil it.
So last show, the chief doctor of the hospital, his son is he autistic or he has a disability, okay? The last episode... It turns out that the kid basically imagined the whole thing.
The whole show.
The whole show was basically... In fact, I believe the episode ends with there's like a snow globe, and they show the kid looking at the snow globe, and it's the hospital.
Oh, my gosh. That's genius.
And they then basically admit that the child that he dreamt up or hallucinated in some way the entire show.
Very Alfred Hitchcock-like
yeah,
ending
whoa.
To that show.
It's a very deep ending,
I
and
like
it
that.
Got a very, as I recall, mixed response.
What was the, like, 80s, Judd?
80s,
yes.
82 through 88.
It's great dialogue. It's really good.
I see Mark Harmon was one of the doctors.
Yes,
he played Dr. Robert Caldwell.
Harmon,
and then he
young
went,
Mark Harmon, yeah.
And then Mark Harmon went on to, I think, be in Chicago Hope, if I'm not mistaken, in the 90s. So
I don't remember that. Yeah, that might be possible.
Yeah, yeah. ER, dude. I recommend it.
Dude, ER, I was
season 8,
ER
though. I just love
season
how,
8.
I love how it's just this random. I started watching season
on.
8.
It was turned on, and I was like, okay, let's
The Clooney years are really good.
We'll watch this.
All right.
And he's an attractive man, too. Not pull punches.
He is very
Doug Ross, very attractive man.
So that's what are we watching? If you guys have recommendations for what we should be watching, shoot them at us on Twitter, at Phil Mackey, at Jay Zolgad, at Dex's Tweets. And also, remember our Vikings conversations even more in-depth every single day on Purple Daily, Apple, Spotify, ScoreNorth.com. And it looks like on our YouTube channels, as of the recording of this, we are 3 subscribers away from 12,000 on the Purple Daily YouTube channel. And we are over 2,500 now and headed toward 3,000 on the Score North MN YouTube channel. So help us out there. If you want to see our ugly faces, you can do that too on YouTube, Purple Daily and Score North. We'll see you guys tomorrow.